Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. This is my dad, Ted.
Welcome to the Smart Thinking Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Knightsky. Leadership is one of the most rewarding callings, and it is the single greatest challenge we all take on in our lives. Leadership is so often confused with power that most people fail to remember that we are all leading every minute of every day by simply being ourselves. Leadership is a term that most of us were taught to associate with hierarchies, and we fail to remember that each of us is not only capable of leading, but that we are leading every day through our normal actions and behaviors. We are intentional and unintentional leaders. Many people who, as Teddy Roosevelt said, step into the arena, find themselves in a position of intentional leadership, and that is what I want to explore today. You see, I find that many of my friends who have stepped into intentional leadership roles find themselves in a lonely place. When you are the leader, many times you carry an odd burden that is a weird combination of empathy, solitude, and ownership. You need to be empathetic to all those that are impacted by your decisions. You have to maintain a level of confidentiality so that no one is hurt by all of your knowledge about the inner workings of the people you serve. And you have to own all of the outcomes. No matter what, the best leaders take the blame for all inactions and they shower others with the credit if things work out. All of this leads leaders to a strange spot: loneliness. The more risks you take, the more innovations you make, the more you support others, the more strangely you find yourself alone. Because so many people can't understand what it is that you're all managing or carrying. Everyone experiences this at every level of a job and in life. Well, I have some news for you. We can address that by approaching our cultures that we live in and serve within with two expectations, two simple switches of our language. They can fundamentally change our cultural behaviors, and the quicker we adhere to these two behaviors, the faster we will find out that leadership does not have to be so lonely. Instead, it can be energizing and rewarding because all others understand that we are actually all in this together. Quick reminder: Buffalo leaders challenge the storms they face, and they do so by maintaining insane levels of optimism, and they lead with empathy and reflection, wondering how things are going and worrying about the impact it has on others. When we look at leadership, we need to take a lesson from Steve Jobs, you know, the co-founder of Apple. Well, when he was at his lowest point, when he resigned, quote unquote, or got fired from Apple, he went and invested his money and helped start a company called Pixar. He bought the inner workings of that company from a guy named George Lucas for $10 million in 1985. One of the first things he decided to do was revolutionize the approach production houses took to developing new content. Traditionally, when a movie begins, you hire all new crews, individuals who come together with one mission, and that's to complete one project. Jobs, well, he decided that he needed to take a different approach to collaboration, because what he recognized was instead of bringing a bunch of people together to come together for one project, he wanted one group of people to come together for a bunch of projects, and he wanted collaboration. So he had a sign made that he hung above the entrance all employees had to walk under when they came to the studio every day. And it's a Latin phrase, alienus non deutius. The phrase translates to alone no longer. Jobs decided that in order for Pixar to advance and move forward to compete with a little animation company called Disney, he needed to break the mold and keep people together, alone no longer, and demand collaboration. As a result, he shifted the culture, and 21 years later, the company he bought from George Lucas for $10 million was purchased by Disney for $7 billion. Not a bad 20-year return on investment, especially because it shifted the culture and it had a huge return. I mean, a 700 times return in value. What was the secret? Leadership and collaboration. This week, when I was working with two different leadership teams who shared the same problem, I realized they needed to shift their mindset and find a way to cooperate and operate alone no longer. Jobs recognized that leadership is lonely, and he also recognized the power of keeping people together and collaborating, and there are certain behaviors that leaders expect and reinforce within their cultures. No one should be allowed to work in isolation. Instead, they should be expected to work together. And in order to do so, there are two behaviors I'm going to ask that you begin to employ in the world around you. Now, if you are within the hierarchy, I want you to do this, and I expect it from you and your colleagues. And if you are at the top of your hierarchy, you need to model this. I'm about to share with you two simple language shifts that should also be taught to children and kids and colleagues and friends and family. Let's start with the one that drives me absolutely bonkers, and it has my entire life. If I could uninvent a word in the English language, it would be the word they. They, yeah. While it has positive uses, I find that too often people use it to cast blame, cast doubt, and advance organizational conspiracies. Often I've been in meetings with people, and this invisible group of people called they are always at fault. They are so easy to point the finger at. They are always the problem. They never care. They seem to be complete buffoons, and they couldn't slice pre-sliced bread. Now here's my challenge to you, to immediately lift your organization's culture by outlawing the word they, and instead replace it with the word we. After all, we are actually usually the they. When people are using that word, they mean it in the context of others instead of us. As a leader, we cannot accept the idea that they are always the problem. Not when we have a buffalo mindset and we accept the simple fact that we control our destiny, our engagement, and our happiness. Imagine if you were sitting there in a meeting and someone said, "They don't care," and you just blurted out, "We." The other person would say, "Excuse me?" And you'd say, "Hey, you just said they don't care, and I said we. It's actually we don't care." Or someone says, "They are the problem." No. We are the problem. "They don't care." "No, we don't care." "They're buffoons." "No, we're buffoons." In an intentionally engaged organization, there is no casting blame. There is ownership. When there is ownership, there is no they. And when you move around in the hierarchy, in boardrooms or classrooms, there is no finger pointing. There are only thumbs being brought to our own hearts that point to we, not to they. I mean, try pointing your thumb at someone. It's really awkward. Ownership begins with we, not they. I am the one who has to own my own actions, my resources, my conditions. And if I don't like it, they can't make it better. Only we can. Do you hear me? Because most people I know refer to others in the they instead of seeing themselves as part of the we. Okay, I'm on a roll here. So I have another word I want to outlaw from the English language. It's not just they. This word got me in huge trouble when I was in the first grade. When we were learning to spell and we were focusing on conjunctions, I found myself laughing so hard that I couldn't stop, causing others to laugh. And eventually my teacher, Sister Jane, went from being upset to just laughing right along with me and the entire class. Because when you're six, the word but is really funny. However, do you know when it is not at all funny? When it is used as a launching pad for critics and criticism. But is not a helpful term, and I would like you to replace it in your language so that you find yourself part of the positive solution instead of the negative mindset of blame. Let me explain. I remember when I first became a teacher. I had worked very hard in college to become a teacher. I usually had two or three jobs going through school. I graduated buried in debt, and I was so excited to be a professional, paid to wear a tie and support kids. It was at my first staff meeting that I saw a colleague say the word that used to make me laugh, and instead use it as a weapon to disrupt the culture, to undermine the good intentions of leadership, and create organizational chaos. I can't remember what our principal Dave was talking about, yet I remember the response of a staff member. It began something like this. "Well, Dave, this is an interesting idea, but did you consider?" And then for the next 5 minutes, I listened to all the ways this wouldn't work. I was kind of stunned that adults talked to each other like this. I just left college where all they talked about was the importance of teaming around the needs of those you serve, and my first professional experience was anything but that. As I advanced through life and leadership, I observed how people weaponize the word but. All these crazy stem sentences. This is a good idea, but. I appreciate the time that went into this, but. I recognize this is a problem, but. It's like a little grenade. And then, when it was compounded with sentences like, I don't mean to be the devil's advocate, but. Oh, I think you get it, right? So how do we shift the culture? Well, we outlaw but, and we incentivize and. A simple change in the conjunctions changes the direction of every sentence. Seriously, think of this. Ready? I think this is a good idea, but we don't have the time. That's a hurdle statement. Now, when you challenge people to use and, they have to think about how to combine their adulations with criticism. Well, most of the time, the criticism doesn't even fit. Ready? I think this is a good idea, and we'll have to work to find the time. That sounds much more solution-based compared to, hey, great idea, but we're not going to do it. Language informs mindset. Mindset sets emotion. Emotion drives motivation. Motivation overcomes obstacles. And success comes from doing all of that while on the journey. They don't care about us, and I like it, but becomes, we care about this, and we'll get it done. How do you do this? Well, first, you model it. You model it in your language. You demonstrate perseverance by becoming an and leader and focusing on the we. If you're a teacher, they aren't making us do anything. We are doing this and it's going to work. Same goes for every organization that any of you lead in or within. So, here's a tool to help you with one of my all-time least favorite sentences. They told us they were going to do something, but they won't do anything about it. Ooh, that sentence just frosts my cookies. The reason is twofold. One, there is an accepted culture, clearly, of failure here. People obviously have not followed through in their lives, and yet there is no willingness on the stakeholders' part to engage in the success. Remember when I started this discussion? Leadership is lonely for a reason, because you're constantly in the arena being criticized, and it is all of our responsibilities to engage to support those people. The new sentence should be, we said we were going to, and we will. So here's the process to support the elimination of they and but. It's called a rapid contract. Rapid in the sense that we are rapidly responding to the needs of those around us and supporting an and culture. As always, it's a very simple tool. The rapid contract is a consensus tool, a communication tool, and a record. You ready? Draw a line down a sheet of paper. Create two columns. On the left-hand side, label it we said or you said. And on the right side, we write we will. See? Left side is you said or I said or we said. And the right side says we will. When you're concluding an interaction, meeting, committee, task force, whatever, we capture our commitments or concerns, and then we identify what we will do or what we did. For example, we said there is a need for more resources. Well, that goes on the left side of the column, and on the right side, we identify what our action steps are, but what we will do. We'll budget more. We will reduce expenditures. We will whatever. Do you see the difference? We is the ownership, and they, well, they is the blame. Every time we bring things to those we serve, we close out the interaction with a rapid contract. We said or you said, and then we write and we identify our collective commitments on the other side. If you want to eliminate the they never listen, they don't care, they're not going to do anything language from your organization, it has to formally be shifted through a process to a we are listening and we'll get it. We'll get it done. We are in this together needs to be the mindset. And we'll stop saying but. They are we, and we will eliminate the barriers that we used to place in the way of our success. So let's do some smart thinking. Describe how you will shift the culture from they to we. List ways you can support an and culture. Describe how you can support those you serve by employing a rapid contract when you have interactions with others to close out the conversation and keep yourself accountable. That's it. That's the Smart Thinking Podcast. Hey, as always, thank you for listening and supporting the Smart Thinking Podcast. Please share this episode and rate it on your platform. Thank you to the Wellpennies for the great music. And I was very excited to see the other day on their Facebook page that they are back in the studio writing new music. Check them out. As we close out this week, please be empathetic to all the leaders around you. Model for those you serve the opportunity we have to be positive in our conjunctions. There are so many hurdles we all face every day. Why would we want to project more onto those we serve alongside? Steve Jobs, he was revolutionary in his approach to animation, and it changed the industry. His company almost destroyed Disney, and most of us were blown away when we first saw their first movie, Toy Story. Like Toy Story, we all lead in many different ways. Buzz and Woody didn't see eye to eye when they first met because they had different perspective. Because Woody was a but-mindsetted leader and Buzz was a they guy. When the two eventually joined forces, it was because they grew a common understanding of how to talk and support each other. They became we as well, and they became and guys. Because they took everyone around them with them on the journey by shifting their language, even Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head. You are alone no longer. You have the ability to shift mindsets, and you first have to model it. When you hear things like, oh, but I'm not good at math. Wait a minute. You mean, and there are certain things that you can do better? They don't care, or we do. As leaders, our obligation is to charge into what is bothering us, and we cannot ever join the cows as they blame. Oh, but Ted, they just won't change. Oh, friend, we can change our world, and we can do it together.
Welcome to your life. There's no turning back. Even while we sleep, we will find you acting on your best behavior. Turn your back on Mother Nature. Everybody wants to. Forever, ever.